Hello, and welcome to the final recording of 2022 for Unfrozen. I am Dan Safarik.
And I'm Greg Lindsay, and welcome to our year in review recap. This was our first full year of recording Unfrozen. We started, of course, the Venice Architecture Biennale at the end of 2021 and got about 9 episodes in. So we have a pretty good pace. This, is, I think, will be the 34th episode of 2022, which means we just managed to clear like 10% of total overall content being devoted to the one and only Peter Rees, former master planner of the City of London. We talked with Peter, we talked about Peter, we did dramatic readings of Peter, but we also had another 30-some episodes, and we're going to talk about our favorites, your favorites, and more. So where should we start, Dan?
Well, let's go to the numbers, since I am working for a statistically-based organization. Fortunately, we have services like Spotify that can tell us exactly how well we're doing. So I got the 2022 Wrapped, just like everyone else.
I was just about to ask, like, what genre are we in? Or what was everyone's favorite genres of architecture in 22?
So according to Spotify, we recorded 1,191 minutes of new content.
Quantity over quality, that's us.
96% more than other creators in your category. Now, I don't know what our category is, but that's impressive, I guess.
Chatting about architecture.
And then we have a super fan. One listener reported to me that Spotify told him that we had spent he had spent 842 minutes listening to Unfrozen, followed by "Way to go, dude!" And I was like, "No, no, no! The prize is yours."
Yes, truly a booby prize, perhaps. But yeah, it was shout out. Do we know that individual listener's name? Let's give him a credit right here.
Yes, I do know who he is. It's Ro Schroff. He is a principal of the 3Mix Architecture in Seattle, Washington.
Awesome, man. Thanks for listening. That's earnestly kind of touching, I have to say. So.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't think I could listen to myself for that many minutes.
I definitely haven't, but yeah, let's go.
What so else our do average, you know? Here's some more stats. Yes, our average plays per episode is 41, which is, is what it is.
Long tail. We're all about the long tail here.
All about the long tail. Our most listened to episodes are tied. One was Future Storage, which was about the project of Marina Otero, who was the recipient of the Harvard Wheelwright Prize, exploring the physical infrastructure that supports our digital world. And the other was Emergent Tokyo, which I think we also enjoyed quite a bit. Both of those had 125 plays.
Unsurprising. I mean, those were two of the highlights of the year there. I think everyone really loves Emergent Tokyo. And I mean, given the press coverage as well, you know, this the miracle that is post-war Tokyo that emerged from that is pretty there. And yeah, I'm surprised to see the Marina was such a hit with that. You know, it can get so abstract talking about the architecture of the internet. But yeah, I can't wait to see the outcome of her project. So we'll have her back on someday.
Oh, heck yeah. Yeah, no, I want to read that manual cover to cover or whatever format it takes. Demographics, well, okay, let's start with the good news. You know, we are an international audience, 74% United States, and then it drops off rather precipitously, 3% Germany, 3% Australia, and 2% United Kingdom, and it's all below 2% past there.
Just really sad I couldn't pull that Canadian audience there, even when I'm only blocks in the CCA, but oh well.
And I also believe we are 93% male and 2% non-binary, and the rest is, well.
I love that we can't even muster a joke for that one. It's like things to do in 2023 is work on our listener representation. Not sure exactly how to do that, but let's work on it somehow.
I think we got to get Dank Lloyd Wright on the show. I think we got to get Boys Firm on the show.
Yeah, exactly. See, I will resist making jokes about that. About, you know, but we'll figure out a way here to diversify our audience to at least reach the normally dismal levels of representation in the architecture profession.
And the least popular episode, rounding out the statistical portion of today's show, was episode 10, which was the first episode of 22, which was me reading from a blog post that I did more than 10 years ago about the propensity to the possibilities inherent in building dome homes.
Well, I'm at least it's what I expected. We have only room to go up to kick off 2023, so we'll have to get some good guests in the pipeline for that. And yeah, what were your other favorites? I would say I have a couple of mine, but I'm curious to hear. It's really a shame that I was look back and that that you know that Eva Hagberg, who just of course gave the Kaplan Lecture at the School of Visual Arts, she was in 2021 there, our last episode of that year, so she doesn't count. But yes, we did have Kate Wagner, we did have Mark. I won't even try to pronounce his last name without practicing. Vanhecker. Of course.
Van Honecker,
yes, those Dutch names. He was a great one. We'll get into it, but I want to hear yours first here in terms of, you know, let's take our top three for each of us.
Oh, I definitely got a big kick out of the Emergent Tokyo discussion, largely because, you know, part of it was us reminiscing about our own adventures in said city and getting bar recommendations from a third-party authority. That was great. I actually really enjoyed the Nakagin Capsule Tower discussion, also Tokyo-based. And also Chicago, had a big Chicago connection there, talking to Iher Gil, who I hadn't spoken to in a long time. So in some ways, it was like an old friends reunion. And yeah, I think probably Big Mansion Hell was probably my third favorite, just because that got into the zone of irreverence that I think we intended to get into from the start, but actually we've accidentally or not had some fairly substantive episodes in terms of content and the seriousness of our Q&A. So I don't know if that's you know, a failure to become the how long gone of architecture and urbanism, or if that's a good or bad thing.
Or whether we're the establishment, which is its own fascinating thing here. You know, there's just, perhaps there's not infinite hunger for podcast listeners, but there is an infinite hunger for podcast guests to be on. So we are very proud and happy to host whoever wants to come in here and have earnest discussions with us, of which we had several. So I'll call out some of the earnest ones. The last episode that we did of the year, I thought was a great one with Blair Kamen. Have long read Blair, had never actually met Blair in person, but, you know, discussing his book, Who is the City For? And another great pair of Chicago-themed content. We had a great discussion this summer, like two different guides to Chicago and sort of discussing Chicago architecture through various lenses. I thought that was really interesting. We got a lot of Peter Reeves and a lot of Chicago content on here, as you might expect on that one. And also, again, Ernest, when it comes to, like, you know, actual big-time people in this, having Patrick McLamey, you know, who was the CEO of HOK, and having him on discussing his career and having that. So it's sort of like, yeah, you're right. Like, we started this out to, like, do, like, you know, a broadcast about architecture, and instead we find ourselves being august hosts. So that was pretty funny for me.
Yeah, I feel like Terry highlights? Gross right now. I really do.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I've enjoyed, I'd say, my favorite episodes are the ones like this one, where it's just the two of us, you know, shooting the proverbial breeze there in that one. So there's a handful of those that have out there and taped in Montreal when we were together this spring, and some other fun ones as well. So those were good. I do think perhaps one of the more unusual ones, I forget, yes, there he is. It was episode 27 back in May. Our youngest guest, unlikely to be equaled, Mr. Chang Sub Lee, you know, who I think recently gave a lecture publicly. So anything we've done to help turn him into the next Bjarke, I guess we should be proud of that.
Well, you know, I have to say we've gotten a little bit further along in that campaign than we might have hoped. Yes, the convention at which he spoke was my own, the Council on Tall Buildings and Urban Habitat. Like a true architect, he went over time and broke the fourth wall and started addressing people in the audience, talking about how architects are boring. He's like, you guys need to shake things up. And he was totally going off script, which was exciting because we didn't know how this was going to end. But it did result in some traffic jams at the cocktail hour when people were trying to get back into the room after it had been reconstituted from theater format to awards ceremony. And let's just say that he took a number of other privileges that were not appreciated. I don't really even want to go into it. But you know, you say more than you know when you describe him as the next BRK.
He's just putting the Tarib and enfant Tarib there. So I'm glad we can change up that. That episode is for you. Although that said, I once also called out a room full of architects as like, you're boring, what are you doing? And it ended up with Tom Main yelling at me. So I'm not sure if he got the better or worse end of that particular deal.
Everyone was very polite. You know, they were just bemused, I think.
Very interesting. Well, what were some of the other highlights for 2022? I would say this is our sort of year-end review show here. I'm curious what sort of jumps out at you overall or what you're looking forward to in 2023.
We certainly got a good pipeline of authors who are releasing somewhat interesting books. We are hopefully going to be talking to Andrew Shankin, who was actually name-checked in Eva's last book. He's a professor at the University of California, Berkeley, who has written a book called The Everyday Life of Memorials, which is kind of about everything that happens to memorials and the statue mania of the late 19th century and how to go about the sober seriousness of commemoration while fully understanding that your memorial might someday be ring-fenced by a bunch of mopeds or, you know, shat on by pigeons. And what does that mean in the context of urban design and architecture? So I think that will be an interesting conversation. We've got some prospective developer architects who would like to talk to us, and I think we're going to be revisiting the subject of the windowless dorm room that we first broached with the episode, I think it was number 4, it was actually a 21, about the Charlie Munger nightmare dorm at UCSD. Apparently, this is a bigger thing than we realized. It is not limited to the bizarre vagaries of the UC office of the campus architect, but it is spread to places like Austin, Texas. We have an architect from Austin who has written pretty much everybody he can think of to no avail to try to get this practice to stop.
Who knew that, like, Kowloon Walled City would be like the defining, you know, template for dormitory architecture of our time? But there you go.
It's funny you should say that too, because I have a little bit of a travel agenda next year, starting to get nailed down, and the first stop that I know of will be Singapore, where I will be shepherding a group of 10 IIT architecture students through the Garden City, and owing to budgetary concerns, the accommodation we are looking at happens to be a hotel, the majority of which has rooms with no windows. So I find that deeply ironic, considering that the objective of visiting Singapore is to see the great integration of indoor-outdoor architecture and a city festooned with greenery and open space and finding the perfect balance between high density and nature. And here you are staring at your circling goldfish on an HDTV screen instead of a window.
And learning about, you know, the intersection of hyperdensity and market economics at the same time there. Although that said, I mean, Singapore is a great place to learn about. You'd think it'd be a great place to learn about that. Although I guess that is not state sector provided public housing. So therefore, yes, market rate hotels for everybody. So, well, that sounds like a good trip overall then. That should be a fun 2023. Other forthcoming highlights, you know, I'd say listeners can definitely expect we will be coming to you live from Venice in May. I don't know how live. Maybe we'll find a live stream. But yes, we'll be back for the Biennale at that point. I've got some other travel that I'm currently lining up there as well. What else do you have guaranteed for 23?
Just before the trip down to the Biennale, I've been invited to speak at the Wood Design Construction Conference in Joensuu, Finland, which has a dormitory with windows and also made of timber, which they are happy to show off and also talk about. To convene a group of timber experts from around the world to talk about their achievements in that field. And hopefully I'll be able to get a bucket list together of the tall high-rises that have gone up in the Nordics just in advance of that. So that would include Mjøsternet, until very recently the world's tallest timber building, and Sara Culture House, which is in a city called Skellefteå, Sweden, which is a gorgeous, probably one of the most beautiful, certainly timber high rises that's been constructed to date. A combination cultural center, hotel, and auditorium for the local theater company.
Very nice. I've got a pair of book launches coming up in 23. I've got chapter contributions to both, so I'm sure we'll get some guests. The first one at the end of February is Designing Solidarity with my MIT teammates, Rafi Siegel and Marissa Morignon. That book is a collection of interviews about, basically, how do you design new forms of collectivity. So we'll have folks like Trevor Schultz at the New School, who's written a lot about platform cooperatives, and other good folks like that. So you know, I'm sure we'll have Rafi and Marissa on at some point. Hopefully me with them in New York. And then I'll actually be out in LA in the fall for the launch of Renewing the Dream, which is a book being published through Rizzoli, effectively sponsored by Woods Bagot, the Australian architecture firm. And this is all about sort of like the history and future of mobility in Southern California. And so I wrote a whole sort of chapter on scooters and delivery robots and all that sort of fun stuff and battles between Uber and the city. So I'm sure we'll get, hopefully perhaps my friend James Sanders, who's sort of the ringleader of that. And we'll have James on to talk about that book and his work with Woods Bagot over the years. And then, of course, I would say my most exciting project for 23, which we're going to have a special Unfrozen miniseries in here for all you listeners who've made it this far, my project at Cornell Tech, the Metaverse Metropolis, which is going to be kicking off in January. We're going to do 6 months. I've got a cohort of great public officials. I won't name anybody here in case they decide they get embarrassed and withdraw. But I've got a great cohort of public officials to learn basically about augmented reality at scale, what it means, what are the problems, what are the challenges. We teased this back in the summer here when I moved back to New York for this. But yeah, we're going to be doing a whole series on here on Unfrozen. We'll probably do one podcast a month with some of the great, amazing folks who are not going to be sort of presenting internally that I've come across in my travels. So once I get that lineup firmed up, I think we'll have some great people on here to talk about it. So for example, I think we might do both. My friend Nick Kaufman, who I met at LSC Cities over a decade ago, he's working with a great German firm called Numina, where they are basically designing cities in the metaverse, in a virtual reality metaverse. And the idea is to use that as a sandbox, as a test bed, to think about what the future of that is. And you know, one thing we were speculating, for example, is, you know, I hear a lot of architects ask this question despairingly. As Figma disrupted Photoshop and forced Adobe to buy it for $20 billion, lest they get disrupted, people are asking, what is the Figma of Autodesk? Like, how does that software get upended, become made more user-friendly? And one of the things we were talking about is, like, does the metaverse become the UX design to whatever comes after Autodesk? So Autodesk, if you're listening, feel free to send somebody our way to talk about that and how you plan to disrupt the disruptors. So that should be a good series as well. But yeah, no, I think it's going to be interesting. I would say things, I think besides the metaverse, I would say I'm curious your thoughts on sort of themes, what other themes that we think we should explore. This is going to turn into sort of a open assignment desk here. Because the one that I'm really fascinated with is, of course, you know, this huge glut of artificially intelligence image generators and text generators. There's ChatGPT, it was GPT-3 and GPT-2 before that. And then, of course, also, you know, pick your poison between Midjourney, DALL-E, and Stable Diffusion. And, you know, one of the groups that I've been working with, hopefully we'll have him on as a guest at some point, is Zach Katz, who's running Transform Your City, which is a sort of new group that's helping with placemaking. And so they are actually using DALL-E and helping working with local advocacy groups like Transportation Alternatives here in New York to come up with new visualization. So rather than saying, like, hey, we want to put in a bike lane, and having local residents say, hey, we have no idea what that looks like, that sounds awful, you can literally just say, here's what the bike lane would look like. Isn't it great? And we can have also people on to talk, I think, about some of the disruptions that'll do, or you know, what that means for architecture practices, given the all-important power of the rendering. I'm very interested about what happens with community engagement and participation when literally anybody can show up with their own renderings of anything they want. Or you can sit down with them and render something in seconds in Midjourney or some of these other groups. Or you can do Stable Diffusion, which you can build your own custom data set. So if you want an AI that only produces Dutch streetscapes, which is what Zach Katz is trying to do, you can do that. So there's a lot of really interesting implications for the practice as a, you know, of course, as image generators, really first and foremost, before you get into the nitty gritty of the building itself. But that front end, how you imagine, how you iterate it, you know, considering we talked a bit about, I think in some of the early episodes, we talked a bit about sort of OMA and its practice and, you know, the sort of brute force generation of form. How does that change, you know, when you can have infinite amount of form generation? We're going to sit do and just, you know, with Midjourney, you could just have it do samplings over and over and over. I'm very curious to see about whether we'll start to see some firms that will massively outsource themselves, perhaps to, you know, low-cost IT hubs in the Philippines or something else, where they've just got batteries of people producing images and sending them back. So lots to think about there. But that's, you know, I was literally sitting with a friend last night who was teaching me the dark art of Midjourney prompting. And trying to understand it out. It's a fascinating time, to say the least, because it's sort of like you're praying to a black box god of AI, asking it to produce images, and you're never quite sure what's going to turn out. You have to tweak the knobs a bit, so to speak. But I don't know, what else? What are your obsessions for 2023, Dan? What else should we have on here?
Well, I definitely I don't know how easy it's going to be to get a guest who's not under NDA and then subject to all kinds of unpleasantries should they break it. But I think we can't avoid the elephant in the room that has been dug across the deserts of Saudi Arabia, the line, which apparently the construction has begun on. And then my understanding is that there is a 2 kilometer tower being designed in Riyadh with a the front runner's unnamed so far, but I think it's the usual suspects. $1 million prize, not even prize, it's $1 million compensation just for entering.
Which is just going
Although
to
I
be a
have
rounding
a
error on the preparation budget for that, right? Like that's advertised as like a huge windfall. I mean, the fees that, and you said it's SOM, Adrian Smith, Gordon Gill. I think there was a Dubai-based firm. There were several other firms in this. But I mean, what are the budgets going to be for that competition? I can only imagine it's going to be in the, I mean, just in the millions for outlet, initial outlay.
The well, the estimate for the overall project budget is in the 5 billion range. So if you go with your typical 10% for the design team, take it down from there. I'm sure there's going to be an army of consultants, but.
Well, yeah, that's what you'll win. So the question, that's what our question is. Like, I would love to know, what's the rule of thumb between, what you're willing to spend in a competition versus like what the eventual possible fees are? Is there a rule of thumb for that too? Like, you spend 1% of the fees on the actual like initial renderings and models? Like, that part I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what their the pro forma is on competition models and renderings, but I do know, again, I have it on good information, can't say how, that there is one team that's already been eliminated because they were 10 minutes late.
That's what it's like in the Gulf, man. And of course, the client will keep you waiting for weeks and weeks and weeks and reschedule, because that's also how it works in the Gulf.
Not naming names, just saying.
I don't need to break any NDAs to tell you that one of the other Riyadh projects we'll have to pay attention to is the Riyadh Aerotropolis. There's my legacy right there, folks. Foster and Partners chosen to build the ultimate Dubai. And that is what I think is really fascinating and can never be underestimated when it comes to like the legacy of Dubai. That like, that the crown prince of Saudi has taken the Dubai model and is going to take it to like the nth degree between NEOM, the line, the tower, and now the airport. Like literally sort of the Dubai model is going to reach its sort of apogee. Perhaps they'll call it the Saudi model someday when we've forgotten, because Dubai is simply not superlative anymore. But yeah, it's very sobering to see Foster and Partners do yet a sort of another verdant desert airport city in the renderings there, similar to what OMA did for Doha, all ahead of the Cup, which is of course happening right now. So yeah, so there'll be lots of Saudi material if we can ever get anybody out from under NDA. For all I know, Dan, you and I are both NDA'd for that one right now. It's quite possible that we're NDA'd and can't even talk about it.
The most popular song in Australia was that people thought it was called "Eye of the Seal," but it was actually "Our Lips Are Sealed" in the early 1980s. So I'm just going to say "Eye of the Seal."
There you go. Well, all right, what else in 2023?
You move through this world, the VR world, the digital world, the three-dimensional digital world that I can only dream about. And I'm hoping that I really am looking forward to seeing those two worlds collide, in the sense where it stops being theoretical and it starts being fungible, where we're actually walking into these, 3D rooms and we're able to sort of, charrettes. Just think about how unproductive they can be, where you've got a bunch of architects in there with their pens, and you've got the community in there and not really understanding like how a 2D drawing, translates into a 3D project. Well, if you had VR, you wouldn't have to do that. It would just be kind of like, let's imagine this together. So I'm kind of picturing, I'd like to see some real life examples of that play through, and then, be able to talk to the people conducting them. I don't know if we'll get to that point this year, but I'm personally just looking forward to tapping into that whole world of knowledge that's, it's a little bit beyond, frankly, what we're doing in the big buildings world over here.
Well, we'll have to get as a guest then. She's going to be one of the presenters in the Metaverse Metropolis program, Dana Chermesh, who's an Israeli architect. She's the founder of In-Situ, which is a phone-based AR app that literally allows you, pulls data out of Department of Buildings in New York and elsewhere, and you just hold up your phone, and the AR app shows you the rendering of the building in situ, in context of that. So it's an exploration of there in that case of, like, I mean, finalized designs, but, like, literally you can just pull people off the street and say, this is what it would look like. What do you think of that? And actually show it the proper aspect ratios and hopefully the right bulk and that sort of thing. So, yeah, so we'll get Dana on to talk about this because it's a really interesting case there about, like, can you actually use this tech to make people less suspicious of the built environment, which has a sort of interesting logic to me there. Like, it's a little playing with fire, or you're fighting fire with fire, I think. But she's built one of the more fascinating use cases that has emerged, and like Snap has championed her work. She used Snap Lenses, and that's, you know, hopefully it'll be interesting to see if we can get some folks from some of the tech companies on, like Snap, which is building urban scale AR lenses for London, Los Angeles, and Santa Monica so far. And allowing you to really reach that point of overlaying digital information, persistent digital information on environments. So, I know we're a podcast, but might have to circulate some imagery of that at some point.
So if people start adopting that, instead of being a glass hole, like with Google Glass, will you be a snap hole if you start using that?
Well, it's just your phone. And, like, you know, I mean, yeah, I mean, people will, in fact, you know, mess with you if you are holding your phone out in front of me. I nearly got mugged, actually, in downtown L.A. late last year, where I was having a FaceTime call with my family. So the phone at eye level with me, facing me, which someone then interpreted that I was surveilling him. So I kind of deserved it. But yeah, that's what he was under the impression that I was having the camera face away from me, like following him while I was having a FaceTime call in the street, like off to the side, you know, where I wasn't bothering anyone. So, you know, these are the kinds of things this is why I'm interested in these sorts of things, where digital and physical meet and overlay and how this sort of stuff gets rendered. So we'll see. Because I would say, I should note, 2023 developments, you know, if Apple drops their headset, you know, it'll be very curious to see how that works out. About whether we will, in fact, have a sort of new class of technology enter the urban realm. Glass, by the way, is still being produced. It's for enterprise users. I had a trial of it a few months ago, and it's comfy, it's lightweight. It's actually not true augmented reality because it's just a heads-up display versus seeing information embedded there. But real-time translation is one of the use cases. It allows you to make video conferencing calls out of the corner of your eye so someone can see through your eyes and help you do instructions. So they're using it in sort of industrial environments. I think it'll find a lot of use cases like that where, you know, people, hopefully it'll be used to enhance people, not to de-skill and replace people, as so many technologies are. Which gets me to, I think, the final theme that I hope we get a chance to revisit and explore in 2023 is, obviously, 2022 was the big year of labor organization and architecture and beyond. We touched upon that briefly at the end of last year with Eva and sort of what that meant. But yeah, I mean, we have not really had a chance to cover that more. I don't even remember the name of the firm off the top of my head that was the first to fully unionize. And I think we should explore some of those efforts here about, yeah, new forms of running practices, what it means to have organized workforces in architecture. It's definitely something that we've undercovered.
I would agree. I agree. And I think there's a lot of territory that's been covered in that subject by other podcasts outside of this industry, but not that much within it, partially because it's relatively new. And, you know, I think the sort of, you know, the Twitterverse and the whatever the next social media platform is that isn't a super conservative mouthpiece for Elon Musk, you know, whatever that is broadcasting out, you know, maybe that's a chance to change the dialogue a little bit. I don't know. Are you on Mastodon?
I have joined Mastodon. I would say for those who are exploring it, I haven't spent much time there, but there is an interesting one. I read a great essay. This goes back to the Designing Solidarity book and the work with Rafi and Marissa at MIT. Nathan Schneider, who is an academic who's written a lot about these issues too, about, you know, new forms of collectivity. There's an instance, I guess, they're running called social.coop or .coop, I guess, technically. Where they are talking about, you know, what they like to call the Fediverse in that case. Perhaps that's the name of federated social media and federated social groups. So I'm very curious to spend some time there once I get around to sending in my application, because that is how social media works in the future, where now it's effectively clubhouses where you'll have to apply in some of these cases. So hopefully I get to sit at their lunch table. We'll see.
I'm reminded of my own furtive search for membership here in Chicago with two of the old school clubs. The University Club and the Union League Club. It's not so much that they rejected me, it's just that it's absurdly expensive to join, and you need letters of recommendation from people who are already members. And One of them was actually very well optimized for conducting a podcast, and they were very impressed with the idea that someone who's doing a podcast would come to their August little club. You know, I was told that for those who want to get in under the wire, 15 days from now, the University Club, which happens to be across the street from my office, I can actually stand in there and see my colleagues working in my office. So I've always been curious of what goes on inside that building. What goes on at New Year's is a vodka luge. And you have to picture the demographic of the University Club accessing this vodka luge, and then you can imagine my dismay at learning of this.
That is an interesting tidbit there. I would say of the various club on Michigan Avenue there, I've only been to like the Chicago Athletic Association there, as it's in its hotel format, which I could more readily picture a vodka luge there.
Yes, that demographic is more, you know, within the Overton window of luge.
Well, that might be a subject we should get back to or discussion. I think it is interesting the rise of, you know, I think at one point they were describing it as the dark forest theory of the internet, borrowing, of course, from the three-body problem, this idea which is flawed in the sense of species hiding themselves against detection. And so therefore, you know, this idea that the forest seems empty, but it's actually full of silent animals. This is, of course, you know, one riff on social media as people go to Discord servers and go to Mastodon and go to these various holes. But there's also seemed like the rise of private clubs. The friend who was walking me through Midjourney last night, we were at a private club in New York that I had not heard of. And yes, I will see your university club or union club with the fact that as a full-time Cornell employee, I have a discounted rate to join the Cornell Club here. So perhaps, Dan, we could record this on the squash court in the future in 2023. I don't know what the room acoustics would be. The echo is probably pretty bad, but, you know, sort of like fizzling the atomic bomb, like splitting the atom, you know, we'll do it in the squash court.
My club investigating new was put to the test when I learned that pickleball is the new hot in the social clubs of the city.
Yes, I say the takeover of pickleball is something that's particularly galling to me as a tennis fan. I should note that, like, I'm looking forward, my personal highlight of 23 will be reconvening with you at the Biennale and then flying directly from Venice with the black-clad architects to Paris for Roland Garros, my lifelong dream of sitting and baking in the sun watching red clay from crushed brick. What could be a more appropriate surface for architects than to actually use building materials to build the surface of the court? So that's on my wish list. Before we go, any other personal highlights of 23 for you, or what are you looking forward to?
I'm still kind of processing 22, to be honest with you, but I am excited to move on from it. That's about the best way I can put it.
Same, yes. Tumultuous year for me as well. I am very much looking forward to the future. I'm always looking forward to the... Well, actually, no, I'm normally terrified of the future as a professional foresight person, but I'm very much looking forward to this future. So,
I think as long as we're casting, it's going to be okay.
We're just going to post our way through this, Dan, the way everyone else does these days. So, you know, you just got to post your way through.
I mean, like they said at the end of Failsafe, it's like when you hear the dial tone, that is the sound of the phone melting, and you know that the missiles have hit Moscow.
I had forgotten that part. Well, that'll be, I'll leave it to you to figure out the appropriate end music for this. But yes, when you hear the screech of this, the one thing I'll leave you with this, before I run off for the holidays is the discovery I made today, going back to the AI for a moment, is someone took Stable Diffusion and realized you could just basically visualize the waveforms of music, and then you could ask it to iterate the waveforms. Stable Diffusion can compose music, and there's amazing examples where it can blend from the sound of typing into jazz and other various things. Interpolations? I don't know. That, you know, that humans have not thought of or have not done. And so that's another thing that AI can do, is it can literally visually create music by just mapping the actual waveform stuff.
I was going to say that beats the pants off of my first rock concert that I gave in college, when we brought an Apple Style Writer up on stage and mic'd it and then based a riff off of the sound of that distinctive sound of that printer initializing. And people asked us if we were industrial. This is like that times a billion.
Exactly. Well, yeah, I think one of those examples started with, it was exactly typing into jazz. There was some other sort of interesting electronic sounds. So something to think about for, you know, composing the music for Unfrozen Season 3 in 2023. All right, let's end on a productive note here. What is going to be the subject of our first episode? You're going to Prague for the holidays. Should we do a post-Prague episode for our listeners?
I'm happy to do that. I'm happy to share what the world looks like under a blanket of hopefully some snow and some residual Christmas market material. I'm supposedly staying in Hradec Králové, which is the city known for its functionalist and Art Nouveau architecture, so I hope to have some reportage from that. Yes, and then we will definitely be hearing from Jean Miro, who is an architect in Austin who has taken it up to kind of be the Don Quixote tilting at windmills known as windowless dorm rooms, which are spreading across the country like wildfire, apparently.
There you go. Got that confirmed. All right, well, on that note, I'm running out the door. I got Christmas shopping to do. It's been a pleasure.
Happy 2022, holidays.
Year in review. See you, man.